Chapter 3, Market, Claiming Your Turf. Important. Many people are reluctant to even think about who they would love to work with because they think they can't have that. This is why it's critical to address mindset before doing anything else. If you move into defining your market and you're holding limiting beliefs about what you're capable of and what you deserve and what the universe can bring to you, you're already starting off a foot race with your pants around your ankles. Now make sure you spend time with the mindset chapter before moving forward. I find that any time I violate a mindset, non-negotiable, the result is frustration, aggravation, and chaos. Never let the inmates run the asylum. Do you let your clients or customers bully you? No, really. This is a serious question. In fact, it's the very first question I ask when I start working with a new client. I want to know what percentage of their customer base is low frequency, meaning they're bullies, they're abusive, they whine, they complain, they're cheap, always angling for a deal, looking for a discount. They play people against each other, threaten to escalate every interaction, and working with them is never clear-cut. It's always chaotic. Blech. They occupy way too many of your waking hours, but when you even dare to think about cutting them loose, you quickly backtrack. Well, they always pay on time, or they've been with us forever, blah, 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 blah. So if that sounds familiar, you're in good company. In my estimation, it's likely that a good portion, I mean 20% if you're typical of your current customers, possibly even more, fall into the pain in the ass category, meaning they're more trouble than they're worth. You make all sorts of justifications for keeping them around. But what it comes down to is that you're scared to fire them. They've got you whipped and they know it. And despite your hopes that they'll improve, I guarantee their attitude will only go one way, and that's down. Now, don't feel bad if this hits a little too close to home. The situation is so common that it's one of the very first things we address when working with the founder. So first, I ask permission to be direct. I say, look, you got a problem here. You need to earn the trust and respect of your team, and you need to do something drastic to do that. And what I want you to do is empower them. Give them the right and the responsibility to get rid of the bottom 20% of your clients who are probably causing 80% of the aggravation, damage, frustration, resentment, and anger inside of your organization. When I say this, most people sit back like I've slapped them. They can't imagine cutting 20% of their client base. It immediately makes them think about a shrinking bank balance. But as we covered in the last section, there's a lot more to life than money, and no amount of money is worth being miserable. On something else. The hole that opens up will be filled quickly with better clients, leading to growth in revenue and happiness, especially if you do number one mindset. You know what your non-negotiables are. Now, there's a great exercise you can fill out to help you get there. So think about it. Are your customers dreams or nightmares? The dreams are the easy to work with, agreeable, trust the process, appreciative. Great results are inevitable. They don't argue. They don't complain. They pay on time. And the nightmare are the emotionally draining, a daily battle. They're abusive. They always have some kind of uncertain income or outcome, and they're just a pain in the ass. Now, there's this old saying, this is not in the book, by the way, that Dan Kennedy used to say, if I wake up more than two nights thinking about you and we're not sleeping together, it's time for one of us to go. I'm going to mark that again. Here's something Dan Kennedy used to say. If I wake up more than 2 days in a row thinking about you and we're not sleeping together, it's time for one of us to go. And think about it. What kind of people keep you up at night? I guarantee you, it ain't the good ones. So let's do a little exercise right now. Imagine for a moment the top three customers or clients you've ever had who are genuinely, you genuinely love working with them and they like working with you. And it's easy to provide value to them, and you easily help them implement and get significant results. They didn't complain. They don't haggle over price. They didn't question your process or threaten your team members. These unicorns may only represent your top 2% or even the top 0.2% of people you've ever worked with. But can you imagine what your life would be like if your entire customer base was made up of clones of these customers? What if every minute of every day and your entire organization felt appreciated, effective, and well compensated? How would that feel? Now contrast that feeling with the nightmare customers I asked you about at the beginning of this chapter. I won't insult your intelligence and ask which you'd rather work with, we all know the answer. Now, you might be wondering why it matters so much that you like the people you serve. After all, money is money, right? Well, hell no. The founders and business owners I work with tend to want meaning in their lives. They're impact-driven. They want to feel like what they do matters and, in Steve Jobs' words, puts a dent in the universe in some way. You can't do that if you're viewing what you do as a transaction with a nameless, faceless entity. Every interaction you have with someone takes something from you and gives something to you. Some may take joy and give frustration. Others may take stress and give pleasure. It's a transaction, sure, but it's a relationship first and foremost. Now, here's a truth we don't always acknowledge. We have limited capacity. If your maximum customer base is, let's say, 100 units, there's a one-to-one relationship between these two groups. For every lousy, annoying customer you have, you're sacrificing working with an ideal customer. It's a zero-sum game. So if your business is 80% pain, misery, and chaos, you only have 20% available for happiness, joy, and abundance. That's why your first move must be to fire the worst offenders to make room for your ideal clients. And I'll go so far as to say the bad ones take up a lot more than one unit. So in the rest of this chapter, we're going to clearly and precisely prescribe and describe your perfect audience or market in such a way that you immediately know if someone is a good fit or if they're going to bring chaos. And important, you're a business, not a charity. People who are broke or broken are not your problem. That's what charity's for. Those who serve the broken, broken will wind up broken, broken too. So if you feel moved to help those who are not in the mental, emotional, or financial space to work with you, allocate a percentage of your profit to charity. But don't make it part of your business to work with the broken, broken. If you do that, it will create absolute misery in your organization and sap the fun out of your work. Your business isn't a charity, but your business can support a charity. Don't confuse those two things. Let's cover your perfect client. When we talk about your perfect client, we're looking at both demographics and psychographics. Demographics and psychographics are like two magnifying glasses that allow us to define a person's objective and subjective worlds. Note that mindsets and values precede demographics and psychographics. Demographics refer to objective characteristics within a population. Demographics include things like education level, position or job title, age, income level, industry, gender, marital status. Psychographics can be difficult to measure. They include attitudes, aspirations, and other psychological criteria, such as what's their perfect life? What prevents that from happening or being true? What opportunities do they wish they could take advantage of but can't for some reason? What are their superpowers, unique abilities, or zones of genius they want to express? Hobbies, values, personal profile. I particularly like the Kolbe assessment, K-O-L-B-E. In fact, one of the things we do when we bring on a new client is we have them do the Kolbe, StrengthsFinder, Print, DISC, and Enneagram. I'm a huge believer in it, and when I know those, I immediately know how they score, how they think, what they value, what they're going to be great at, where they're going to be problematic, and what kind of psychological barriers we have to overcome in order to help create a new identity. I spend my time inside the minds of my clients. That's why I know I can mind read and talk to them in any circumstance. And when you know your customer and you can speak to them in any conversation or any podcast or any speech, they're like, oh my God, you're reading my mind. Again, don't confuse this and think that it doesn't apply to whatever business you have. Your business isn't different. Speaking to people and relating to them is what makes them want to buy. They've got to have that deep emotional connection and feel they know, like, and trust you before you can engage that left logical brain. The 30-minute avatar. Go back to the question I asked you earlier about your favorite customers or clients to work with. Bring one specific person to mind and answer the following questions. What are their demographics? What are their psychographics? And then map as many points on 4x6 cards or any kind of tool you have. These days, I just use Google Docs, and I write them down, and I brainstorm there. But then go back and repeat this process with a second member of your favorite clients group, and then a third and a fourth. Now, truth be told, I like to have 10. I can work with as few as one, But the more I have, the easier it is to do everything we're about to do. Now, then what you do after you go back with this process and you create 2, 3, 4, 5 of them and you have a stack of cards, you look for the similarities. Are they all in a certain industry? Do they all have a specific identifiable personality type? Are they all recently married or recently single? Do they share an affinity for long-distance running? Are they former athletes? You gather as much info as possible and create a single avatar with commonalities. You can also do this with the customers who make you nuts. And this is where you involve your team. You have them fill out cards on the people who drive them crazy, getting as much detail as possible. Then you'll be able to identify chaos the second it walks in the door. Your perfect prospect profile. The 30-minute avatar exercise is good for quick wins. It's like a rough sketch or outline. I wouldn't base an entire new business model on it, but it can give some good insight and unveil some hidden patterns that you can use as a starting point. This next exercise is a much more detailed process. Your perfect prospect profile is something you could use as a standard operating document for a brand vision. Now, the following document is excerpted from a strictly internal document. It's an abbreviated version of my own perfect prospect profile, that I'm sharing with you specifically because it's explicit and unapologetic. Now, you may read this and think it's a little obsessive, too specific, or over the top, but it's this level of detail and intention that enables us to attract the right people. And this is the level of detail you need in your own perfect prospect profile. You're instructing yourself, here are the types of people I want you to be on the lookout for. Also, these are the types of people I want you to avoid like the plague. You will have different criteria for your target market than we do. What you want is a picture so clear in your mind that you intuitively react to people when you meet them, listening for clues that tell you they're a hell yeah or hell no. Now for ours, I'm going to go through the basics right now. Title, business owner, founder, CEO, or partner. Why? We don't work with employees, okay? Someone can bring them, but we only work with founders, decision makers, and check writers. Next, business description. B2B. I prefer that over B2C for the same reasons I mentioned earlier. In my particular case, a B2C usually is selling a cheap product to a lower ticket audience. Not always, but usually. So they're business to business. They're usually in the $2 to $250 million range. Why is that? It's because if they're below that, they're usually dealing with some financial constraints and I don't want to deal with it anymore. This isn't an always, but it's a most of the time. North America, my particular case, will gladly work with people overseas in any country, but I found that, especially in the United States right now, the value of the dollar, like in Canada, for example, they have to come up with a lot more cash. Australian dollar is very weak right now. So's the euro at the moment I'm recording this. So it all comes down to the investment size, it's capital. Next, 10 to 250 employees. If they're too big, chances are they're going to be answering to an advisory board, board of directors. The CEO might have to get permission to write out a check. I don't want to wait. Okay. They must have client transformations and social proof that their products and services work. Very rarely will we work with a brand new startup with someone who hasn't built and sold a company before. If it is a startup and an experienced founder, then we'll do it. And ideally, they're selling a product that's $10,000 or higher. Ideally more. Why is that? Because we can go in, and if we're selling a $50,000 or a $100,000 product, they don't have to make a lot of sales to justify the investment in us, and we know we can produce several million dollars worth of value very, very quickly. Again, this isn't an always, but it all comes down to creating movement and success. So some of the personal demographics, men and women, 45 years and older, typically they have a 2 million or greater net worth, quarter million or higher income. They're usually married and they have kids and pets, and they're English speaking and ideally in a US time zone. And the key reasons for all these is people who are a little bit older, have some experience under their belt, they're more likely to be coachable and listen. And again, this isn't always. We've got a couple 20 somethings, but once you got some years under your belt, the ego is tamed, under control, easier to work with. The exception being if you've been coached and belong to coaching organizations, it helps a lot. Some more self-identifiers. They're a speaker, author or best-selling author, a podcaster, a TEDx or TED speaker, or they belong to any of the organizations like EO, YPO, Tiger 21, Strategic Coach, Genius Network. They know that investing in a group of high-functioning, communicative, successful people will rub off on them. Some of the psychographics, they meditate. They have a background of collaborating. They paid for coaching in the past. They're interested in personal growth, meaning they belong to Tony Robbins organizations. They've done personality profiles and personality tests like the Kolbe. And one of the things that we look for now is we look for people who are Kolbe quick start 8s, 9s, or 10s. That basically means they know what they want, they hear it, and they make fast decisions. If they're typically the kind of person who is a high fact finder, that means they need to know a lot of stuff before they can make a decision. They have to think about it, talk to someone. My attitude and what I tell people is, look, that's the investment right now. If you got to go and talk to someone and you take a lot of time, I'm going to have to charge you double. Okay? We're for people who are fast decision makers. They know what they like and they know how to think on their feet. Right? Now, you want to have fact finders on your team, but they're usually not great founders. They're also cause-oriented. They give back. They do philanthropic investments or work. In the past, they're usually libertarian-minded. People who have strong political motivations and think strongly about something, they feel a little too fundamentalist to me, usually going to be a pain in the ass, and I find them to be unlikable. In general, we find spiritual but not particularly religious are easier people to work with. Again, open-mindedness. So in my experience, any form of fundamentalism is a deep warning sign of a mental disease. How do you like that? Polarization is part of the game here, ladies and gentlemen. All right, next, avoid at all costs. High fact finders already mentioned that. They're great team members, pain in the butt as clients, fundamentalists, social justice warriors, not interested in your politics, not interested in your politics, not interested in your politics, blainers, whiners, and malcontents, snowflakes and victims, what I call alphabet terrorists or anyone associated with cancel culture, a-holes, extremists, litigation attorneys, or anyone with a history of litigation, or people typically who are only speakers, only coaches, too hard to create massive leverage, unless they've got some really, really great business experience as advisors, okay? Coaches and speakers, a little bit difficult. All right, so now it's your turn. There's a worksheet inside the book, but go and do your own or model mine. And again, one of the things you can do is make sure you check out the bonus video that I include. I actually go through some of our own stuff so you can see how I present and perform that. How to read minds. After speaking with hundreds of thousands of business owners, I have a more holistic view of those I can best serve and those I most want to work with. There's certain things they say that make my ears stand up, and I know I can help them by the way they talk about the pain they're experiencing. And once you've spoken with enough of your ideal clients, you'll also have the same sixth sense. Once you master messaging, you'll know exactly what to say to trigger their intrigue buttons so they want to become a client. Now, here are the three main pain points that I solve. Category one, just sold. I just sold my business. Now what? Now, what's going on inside their head is, what I really want to do is, or the reason I was doing what I was doing so that I could, or I have all the money I need. I want to create bigger impact, more purpose, and do something that's lifestyle compatible without so many moving parts. I want simplicity. I want elegance. But I'm not ready to retire. I have more in me for another act or two. I'm bored. I'm ready for my act 2, 3, 4, 5, but I'm not sure what I should do next. What do you think I should do, Mike? Those are magical words, by the way. Now, category two are seeking to maximize revenue. Here's someone who says, I know I'm leaving money on the table. I want to 10x my revenue so I can sell my products and services for a higher price to a better customer. What's going on inside their head is, How do I get my message out there? How do I go big and grow an audience? How do I become more relevant? How do I monetize this vision beyond my company? We want to grow our business 10x or more. We have a great steak, but we lack sizzle. We have a great product to sell, but I know we aren't charging what it's worth, and our messaging and positioning is off. Or we're looking for ways to create MRR, that's monthly recurring revenue, or turn our IP, our intellectual property, into new products, services, or passive income. Now, category three, I've outgrown my current business. As I like to say, this happened to me. I've outgrown who I am, what I do, why I do it, and who I do it for. I'm stuck. I'm bored. I've forgotten how to think big or think outside the box. I'm depressed, suicidal. I'm afraid to admit this to anyone around me because I don't want to scare them away or admit that I don't have all the answers. I'm supposed to be the leader. I'm pigeonholed into category X when I'm capable of doing so much more. Now, what's going on inside their head is, as a founder or CEO, I don't feel valued in my own organization. I've evolved as a human being, and I want to express myself creatively and be valued for who I am versus what I do know or appear to be. I want to grow this business and sell it so that I can create my next act, okay? Now you have three strategies that you can stack to help you define the perfect people you want to be a hero to. Start with the simplest exercise and map out the demographics and psychographics of your favorite people, your favorite clients, and add dimension to that exercise by creating your perfect prospect profile. If you have the experience to amplify that profile, use the pain approach. Once you have a detailed description of your market, you can use these assets in a number of ways, from onboarding team members to preparing marketing collateral. Our next step is to figure out how you're gonna make some cash.